All right. More of my favorite genre, house music from DJ Dom over here.
I can play jazz, guys.
Does anyone else suddenly have a craving to attend a Zion rave?
Like from the Matrix?
Is that a Matrix reference?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure that's a Matrix reference.
Yeah, Morpheus.
I think it was more of like a downbeat, kind of rave than this.
Yeah, it was hardcore techno.
They were not having that good a time in Zion.
All right, you don't come to the Zion rave then, and it'll just
right,
be me
that
being
fine.
Like, and it'll
just trying to picture Thomas in Zion with no sports.
What do you mean? I have
no
lots
parlays,
of sports.
No parlays to make.
My sport is who can figure out the funniest way to ask Morpheus why his sunglasses don't have handles.
They do. They just pinch his nose.
All right. Anyways, we're coming to you live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at RackSteel.com. Now joining us, we've kept him waiting on the line long enough. From ESPN, he is Greg Wyshynski. Wish, what's going on, man?
One could not be told what the Western Conference wild card is. They have to see it for themselves.
Yeah, and we are in the process of discovering that for ourselves out here in Vancouver. I mean, from a national kind of neutral point of view, what did you make of, you know, JT Miller? I don't want to call it the final blow, but the empty netter, you know, setting up a goal in that game where the Rangers looked just absolutely lifeless for most of it. And the Canucks are still in it, but it feels like that was a turning point. What was your reaction to how that game played out on Saturday?
Well, I mean, obviously you guys have a much different perspective on that loss than a lot of us do because of the JT Miller of it all. But, you know, for me looking at that race, I think the difference for me is that you have a team that has really taken the bull by the horns in a way that in the East, maybe there isn't. I mean, that's kind of the closest thing. And they've gone on a nice run of a bunch of games with that only one loss. But with what the Blues have been able to do in the last several weeks and asserting themselves in that wild card spot, I think it's got to be demoralizing for Vancouver, demoralizing for Utah. Obviously, Calgary is hanging as tough as they can and had a really nice swing through the New York area. But when I look at that race, it's less about, you know, JT Miller and the Rangers delivering a death blow than the St. Louis Blues not cooperating with anybody else on the bubble and coming back to earth, because it looks like they're trying to put this thing away.
Yeah. So the Blues over their last 10, for example, 8-1-1. Right. And it, I think demoralizing is a good way of framing it, because Calgary has 13 points, right? Like they're literally playing 109 point pace hockey from a point percentage perspective, and they're losing ground. Utah even has 12, right? Like it's not like they've been playing badly. They're 5-3-2 and points in 7 of 10, and they're losing ground. This is pretty remarkable, the heater that the Blues are on here.
It is, and I did a feature on Dustin Wolf of the Flames last week, and kind of got into part of it was the ins and outs of experiencing your first playoff race like this and being a starting goalie in the league. And, you know, the bottom line for these guys is that they have to focus on the task at hand. They've got to do what they can to win these games, and, you know, the Flames have done a really good job at it. But then on your off days, you're agonizing at watching the scoreboard and seeing the lack of help in trying to make all of your efforts on the ice worth it. And I think that's kind of where these teams are right now. I mean, the Blues are going to decide who the wild card team is. If it's them, that's because they just decided that they're just going to keep winning. If it's someone else, it's because the Blues have opened the door for them. And that's not something I would have predicted a few months ago about this Blues team.
Nope.
It seems like it's the same dumb dance we do with Doug Armstrong every single year, where it's like, will he trade Braden Schenn because the Blues stink? And then he doesn't trade anybody, and then they end up being a wild card team. So it's boring, really. I don't think I'm going to play that game anymore that Doug plays. But overall, you know, the team that they kept together is been a cut above, and they've certainly found a groove in the last few weeks.
Yeah. Okay. Bigger Four Nations face-off winner, the Blues, or the Ottawa Senators?
Insofar as what, reputation?
Well, just like Ottawa's come back and they've got this like totally reinvigorated version of Jake Sanderson and Brady Tkachuk, right? Two young guys who stepped up for Team USA, and it feels like that's translated, carried over for them into the NHL regular season. Whereas St. Louis got Team Canada hero Jordan Binnington back, and he's been on an epic heater driving this, you know, highly surprising Blues run. Who won
more? I'll go with Ottawa for a different reason, which is that they didn't let Linus Allmark play. And he's literally started, I think, like 11 of 12 or 12 of 13 games for them during this streak where they've established themselves as the first wild card in the East. Like, if you look, I mean, there are a couple of reasons why the Senators are doing what they're doing right now. One is they've just given the crease to Allmark and let him run with it. And, you know, the second thing is the Dylan Cousins trade started paying off dividends immediately. Then you have Sanderson, then you have Brady and what they've been able to do. But it's kind of their forward depth beyond the top line that's been really impressive. I mean, the Cousins things worked out incredibly well. They're getting great contributions from down the lineup, from Pinto's line, for example. So, I think that the number one reason for me is the ability to play a guy who still is one of the top goalies in the league over and over again because he was rested up during his injury and then didn't waste his time with Team Sweden. And then the rest of it that I just said.
Looking more at the Eastern Conference playoff picture and, you know, tying it into the Rangers here, because obviously Canucks fans invested in this Rangers team, not just because that's where JT Miller is now and there's going to be that curiosity, but of course they also got their first round pick and immediately flipped it to Pittsburgh. And the Rangers have played some pretty uninspiring hockey in recent days here. Now there's a lot of kind of concern here in Vancouver, like, could that end up being a top 10, a top five type of pick even in 2026, if it doesn't convey this year? How concerned are you about, not just can the Rangers hang around in the playoffs spot this year, but could the bottom fall out on that team as early as next season, considering, you know, how they've played this year, the age, all of that catching up to them?
So I don't think they're going to be a playoff team. I just don't think they're going to be able to find that level of consistency. And while I don't have much faith in the teams that are currently with them or ahead of them, be it Montreal being in that spot, the Islanders being right there, the Blue Jackets, they can get their act together. You know, none of those teams really inspire much confidence, and none of those teams have Igor Shcherbina either. This feels like a miss for them. To answer the second part of your question, one of the reasons this team stinks is they've got a cloud hanging over them called the off season. And we've already seen the first inroads that Chris Drury, their GM, on probably the advice of owner James Dolan, made in trying to reconfigure the core of this team by trading away Jacob Trouba and then trading for JT Miller. And JT Miller, if you want to believe all of the soft tampering they've done around Brady Tkachuk, like, they clearly want to be more of a Brady Tkachuk, JT Miller, you know, find that dog in them type core versus Zibanejad and Kreider and the group that they have now. So if the concern is the bottom's going to fall out, I'm not too concerned about it. One, because they've got a pretty talented roster. But two, I think they're going to be hyper-aggressive in the offseason to continue to remake this team. And I'd be really surprised if guys like a Kreider and Zibanejad are both there next year, because I don't think that'll be the case.
Is there a team you'd rather own a short position on than the New York Rangers? I'm asking for Kyle Dubas.
No, I don't think that there is. But listen, that was a risky thing, moving that pick. And I mentioned it a few times during the deadline, but I think the shambolic disaster that is the current incarnation of the Penguins, in which they're, you know, trying to satisfy aging stars by being competitive by any means necessary and not getting there, and then having to cast an eye over at the Capitals and seeing how to actually do it. I actually think that Kyle had a pretty decent deadline in the acquisitions that he made. I'd be worried about that pick a little bit.
Yeah, if the Canucks helped the Penguins build like the Lemieux to Crosby to McKenna bridge. I don't know. It's going to be like the Cam Neely trade on steroids in this market. Hopefully that doesn't happen.
Well, then we get into, is Jim Rutherford playing the long game as a Pittsburgh trade?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's a good spin. I like
it. He does love Sidney Crosby, so that's interesting. It's a little parting gift for Sidney Crosby.
Let's talk Devils a little bit, Wish. Jacob Markstrom reeling. No Jack Hughes. They've only won 4 of their last 10, lost 2 in a row going into tonight's game. I mean, what's the ceiling on this team relative to, you know, the Caps and the Carolina Hurricanes and the Metro, and what do you expect tonight?
Well, as a Devils fan, I'm really excited about Maryland's run in the NCAA tournament.
I lost a lot of money on that buzzer beater.
Oh, did you really?
I'm still over it.
Oh, did you have the under?
No. Yeah, I had the Rams. I had the comeback. All right, sorry.
The Rams. Okay, yeah. Because that shot changed a lot of things for a lot of people. But luckily, I had them. I'm both a Maryland grad, and I had them in my survivor pool, so I'm okay. The Devils are interesting because, you know, they don't have Dougie Hamilton, and they don't have Jack Hughes. And they've had some really interesting performances since Jack went out. Like, Jesper Bratt has been kind of revelatory in how good he's been in the absence of his line mate. And I think that's a positive for the team at a time where there aren't a lot of positives. Like you said, Markstrom's been mediocre this season for them. You know, the idea was that the tandem was going to be the strength of the team. And I think they've gotten that out of Jake Allen, but not exactly out of Markstrom. What this team is a team that is scratching and clawing and trying to find ways to get into the playoffs, get some extra ticket revenue, knowing that their ceiling is you know, about 4 feet right now because they can't win the cup without Jack Hughes, and they probably can't beat the Carolina Hurricanes without Jack Hughes. So, you know, Sheldon Keefe has tried to dial it back and play a more defensive style. It's worked in some cases, it's not worked in others, but it's a team that's had the identity of it ripped out of it without having Hughes on the roster, and in some ways without having Hamilton on the roster. And so it's a shell of what it should be, and I think they're just trying to do whatever they can to get a little playoff revenue in Jersey.
We got a text in from a listener who calls themselves a really good pickle, and he says, does the Devils fan base speculate about a future with Quinn Hughes as much as the Canucks fan base speculates about a future without him? And there's a lot of concern already growing, and he's still under contract for 2 more years after this one, that he is going to bolt most likely for New Jersey. Does that dominate the imagination of Devils fans as well, looking down the road and dreaming of the Hughes brother reunion?
Do you mean in the sense that Devils fans know that Andre Palat's money comes off the year that Quinn's a free agent, and then Dougie Hamilton will only have 1 more year in his contract that could probably be bought out? Yeah, no, I don't think we've ever thought about that. No, but here's the Devil fan concern, though. Like, I mean, they all want to have to be in New Jersey, and so far so good. I mean, I think the assumption is that Jack Hughes likes being with the Devils. He likes the organization. There's been, you know, several levels of frustration, probably unrelated to the Devil's plight and more to do with Jack's injuries. I mean, his brother is going to be locked up there because of his age and you know, restricted free agent rules for a bit. So logically all three would be Devils, but, like, you know, we're entering an era of player empowerment. I mean, what if they're all just like, you know what, we want to make the Red Wings champions, and they all decide to go there instead? Like, who knows?
But I mean, Jack's not a free agent to what, like 2030? So he'd have to strong arm the Devils to trading him there. And Luke.
Yeah.
I just feel like the Devils have a lot of leverage. It's like, if you guys want to all three play together, it's here or bust.
Exactly.
Right.
You'd think that. So, you know, in the grand tradition of the Anaheim Ducks signing Rob Niedermeyer in order to honeypot Scott Niedermeyer as a free agent, which is also something Devils fans experienced. The Devils have 2 pieces of the Hughes Triforce, and you'd figure that the third piece would come to Jersey. They're going to have the ways and the means, and the cap will be astronomical by then. So yeah, it's definitely a topic of conversation in Jersey.
You got it. This is why, though, you just spelled out the reason that, like, sometimes I see conversations online, I don't engage in them, and people will say stuff like, well, why would the Devils trade anything if they think that he's going to sign with them as a free agent. And it's like, because if you ever have the chance to land Quinn Hughes in a trade, you don't say like, oh, how much it's going to cost. You just say yes, just whatever it costs. Who cares?
Yeah. You see, this is what makes me miss Lou Lamoriello as a GM, because if Devils were to do that, there's a better than good chance that Lou would have traded Luke Hughes to the Canucks.
Yeah,
that's just kind of how he is.
Yeah, that would really be a monkey paw reunion for Quinn and Jack. Wish out west. Last one, just about the state of this playoff race. We know how this goes, right? Like, teams run hot at this point of the year and tend to, like, I'm thinking about like Taylor Hall's run in, what was it, 2018, right? The team that makes it ultimately has to run hot, and the Blues have done that to this point, but there's still road to run here. Which, if anyone does it, if anyone upsets the apple cart here, Flames, Canucks, Utah, give me your power rankings of those three teams and why, or what it would look like if they were to get in.
Insofar as like who could beat Winnipeg in the first round?
No. Insofar as who could realistically catch St. Louis now that their hold on this second wild card spot feels pretty demanding.
You. Yeah, no, I still think it's Calgary. Like, you know, I they've got the goaltending advantage with the way that Dustin Wolf has played. And I thought he had, we've kind of talked about their time in New York and the job that they've done in those games. I mean, like, that's a guy who got yanked in Toronto on national television and then came back and played a really, really good game against Jersey and kind of like reestablishing himself. I thought that was a really important moment for a young goalie, but you know, they've kind of smoked and mirrored it a little bit. They don't score at all. They rely on their defense and rely on their goaltending, but sometimes down the stretch, that's kind of where you'd rather be than hoping, you know, a power play stays hot or hoping that, you know, a scorer on a heater stays on a heater. Sometimes you'd rather be the team that plays to the margins and relies on their goaltending than anything else. And so, you know, I'd still say it's Calgary, but the way the Blues have been going, I just don't know if they're going to give up that spot.
Wish, thanks for your time as always, man. Enjoy the Quinn Hughes, I don't know, preview or something, I guess, tonight in New Jersey. We'll see how that one unfolds. Thanks for doing this.
There's always a chance he wants to stay in Vancouver.
There's always a chance. That's what we're telling ourselves.
Don't lose hope.
We're not going down
that
road yet.
Your sushi is better than what we have in
Exactly.
Jersey, so
that's
that
right. All right. Thanks, Wish. Yeah.
Better than what you have in Newark?
Shockingly, what you guys pull out of the water is better than what we pull out of the Hudson River.
Thank you, Wish.
Take care.
That is Greg Wyshynski from ESPN weighing in on the Canucks and the Devils' future as well. And I hate to go down the road too much, right? Because it is still so far in the future. He's not a UFA until 2027, but it's also dominated the conversation so much. Like Jim Rutherford himself said it in the Gary Mason article, right? Where it's just like, yeah, we have to do everything we can to convince Quinn Hughes to stick around. And I think really since that point, it's been a huge topic of conversation for Canucks fans. The other thing, you know, Wish said about the Rangers pick potentially transferring to next year and being this really, really valuable pick. You know, he made a similar point to you, which is part of the reason the Rangers are struggling so much. Yes, there's massive roster construction issues and age and all of that, but it's a vibes thing too. And they will have a chance to at least partially reset the vibes this summer, whether that's a coaching change, significant roster changes, whatever it is. And I look at the Rangers, you know, like when we were talking about Calgary at the beginning of the year, and I was saying, I don't know if I can quite get on board with them as a bottom five team because there's just too many like real NHL players, like quality NHL players on the team, right? With Kadri and Huberto and Coleman and Backlund and Uyghur and Anderson. And that's kind of how I feel about the Rangers looking ahead. It's just like they don't have the makeup of a bottom five team to me unless the vibes are truly putrid. You know what I mean? But if you can fix the vibes a little bit, they don't look like a bottom five team.
Well, so I agree with you. I agree with you. The thing is they're old.
Yes. So there's always that like risk that everyone starts the steep downhill part of the age curve at the same time.
Or I think the way I'd explain it is like your surface area, your exposure to the age cliff is greater, right? Like, because Kreider hit it this year, and all of a sudden it went from, wow, this guy's one of the game's most unique power forwards. He's still a beast on the PK. Like, he's still good. He's just not the guy he was, and man, has it come quickly. You know, I'm not saying that it's going to happen. I, by the way, it also happened to Mika Zibanejad this year, 5-on-5, even though he was sort of reinvigorated for a short spell by the JT Miller trade. But I'm not saying that it's going to happen to JT Miller or Artemi Panarin or Vincent Trocheck necessarily next year. But if it happens to one of them, like if it happens to Panarin or Miller, they're in a lot of trouble. Right? Like their exposure, their risk profile in terms of the age of their roster is through the roof. Then you throw in, you know, Lafreniere hasn't developed the way, like if Lafreniere takes a step, they could be really good. If Adam Fox gets over these injuries and gets back to being who he was, they're going to be really good. Keandre Miller, same story, right?
Yeah.
If Braden Schneider takes a step, But here's the fundamental truth about this Rangers team is for a long time they've been propped up by the exceptional play of Igor Shesterkin. Yes. Are we sure they're not one injury away from being like they're one injury and one old guy regressing from being absolutely in the mix? I still think a coach solves it. I still think the way that they're playing reminds me a lot of the Boudreaux Canucks.
I wonder if there'll be any high-profile coaches on the market this offseason.
Ones who excel at installing structure?
Hmm. We'll see. That could be an interesting dynamic. Wouldn't that be fascinating?
Yeah.
On that note...
I have no idea what you're talking about.
No idea. Couldn't possibly guess what I'm talking about. On that note, we'll take a break here. We will continue to look ahead to tonight's game against the Devils. Thomas Hickey, former defender in the NHL, now doing the broadcast for Amazon Prime. He joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Strantz. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. JanPro, from showrooms to stockrooms and everything in between, JanPro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit janpro.ca. It is the Canucks versus the Devils tonight, 4:30 start time. And of course, this is an Amazon Prime game. So if you're not able to watch on TV or stream on Prime, you can listen to it here on Sportsnet 650 with Batch and Randeep on the call. And in just a minute or two here, Thomas Hickey from the Prime broadcast is going to join the show. And this is kind of an interesting one because the Devils are in such a weird place where they're definitely going to make the playoffs, but it feels like there's no stakes to them making the playoffs because they're missing Jack Hughes. And, you know, there's been some interesting comments coming out of New Jersey over the weekend from Sheldon Keefe about one of his players that I want to get into with Thomas Hickey. But so many of the other teams the Canucks have in the schedule, you can look at and say, well, that's a desperate team, right? The Islanders, they're trying to hang around. The Blue Jackets, they're trying to hang around. Then you've got some really elite teams on the other side. The Devils just fall into this like nebulous other category where it's like, well, they're a playoff team, but they're missing their best player. They seem to be frustrated. It's a bit of an odd opponent, I find, for the Canucks tonight.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. You know, the way that they lost the last two games, you'd think that the Canucks are getting a hungry opponent here. But you never know how a team or a locker room is going to react when a player like Kovacevic gets called out, you know, the way he was pretty prominent.
Yeah.
Very prominently.
Extremely notably. Keith. Yes. Yeah. In a way that you don't see too often, right? In a manner you don't see. Too often. And I think that's maybe a byproduct of they're not in any of the normal buckets we put teams in at this time of the calendar year, right? Like there's some teams where it's like, oh, they're cup contenders and they're, you know, trying to make sure they're getting tuned up. There's not a ton of stakes, but they still want to be playing their best hockey. There's other teams that are desperately striving. There's other teams that are just playing out the string because they know they're already a lottery team. The Devils do not fall easily into any of those. They kind of feel like the Minnesota Wild a little bit to me. Like that would be the closest comp in the Western Conference.
Like this is a powder dry season?
It's like we're going into the playoffs. We're definitely in the playoffs, but we don't have very particularly high hopes once we get there.
Yeah, and we kind of know that our real opportunity looms on the other side.
Yeah. All right, now joining us, as mentioned, former NHL defenseman, now working on the Amazon Prime broadcast. He'll be working the Canucks and the Devils tonight. He is Thomas Hickey. Thomas, thanks very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm good, guys. I'm heading to Prudential Center for a big one, but yeah, I'm excited. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's our pleasure, and I'm looking forward to this one tonight as well. I mean, it's all big games for the Canucks now, especially after the results over the weekend. They desperately need wins. We were just chatting about this Devils team, and they just kind of find themselves in this strange position where you know they're going to the playoffs. They're pretty much locked in. But without Jack Hughes, it's hard to really look at them as, you know, true Stanley Cup contenders. And what have you thought about this Devils team kind of after the Hughes injury and how they're playing right now and potentially heading into the playoffs?
Yeah, they're a bit of an identity crisis. I think they're a bit lost. And, you know, I would echo the same sentiments about, you know, them being in maybe a cushy spot. But I don't think that's the case, you know, just you know, being around the group, watching their broadcast, they're sort of looking in the rearview mirror right now. And I think for good reason, that gap is really, really tightened up behind them. And yeah, I do think that they're a playoff team. They've been that in that position the entire year, but you know, it's almost like things, you know, I think every coach would want the opportunity to be in a playoff spot all year, but found themselves in a weird spot after playing more games than anyone else and starting the year really well. They sort of not been themselves for a couple months, but at the same time, I think the entire year, it's like, well, we're not catching Washington, and we're probably playing Carolina in the first round. It's probably really tough to keep your group going and motivated. So I think they've fallen out of it a bit, and they sort of got to find an identity here before the trade deadline, or sorry, before the playoffs come, because the trade deadline was sort of like a shock to them. Because you lose two of your best guys in Hughes and Dougie Hamilton to go along with Siegenthaler. So, you know, not too sure what we'll see out of Jersey, but I don't think they're a team that's comfortable and ready for round one quite yet.
Thomas, did you see that Rangers game? You weren't there, but I don't know if you were there, but did you watch that Rangers game on Saturday?
Yeah, I did. I was working that day, but I watched the replay of the game. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious because, you know, you were a mobile puck moving defender in your career. What were your thoughts on the Hughes performance?
There's no way that you need to put my name in any sentence to talk about what he did. I mean, I was glad that I didn't. It's a shame I didn't see it live, but at the same time, I'm glad I could watch it on my computer, and I've rewound so many times watching him on that, not just the offensive blue line, like we're used to seeing that, but it, like that end-to-end rush he had,
yeah.
A couple of them that, you know, didn't end up generating a goal, but the scoring chances, I mean, you guys see more of Quinn Hughes than I do, just covering the Canucks in the daily, but I thought that was one of the best, greatest games I've ever seen, and it had me excited, hoping that we're going to see that same performance again tonight. I mean, look, it's a guy that clearly is trying to will his team to wins and to points in whatever way he can, and it's almost fun watching him. He gets the puck in his own zone, and he'll sort of take a couple laps back, and you almost see an internal conversation in his head going, okay, I got to wind it up again and beat three guys to create something, and he's continually doing it. It was a masterpiece, wasn't it?
It was, and it's almost a perfect storm situation to see it on display, because especially tonight, I mean, we'll see if Elias Pettersson or Nils Höglander are able to suit up, but if they're not, I mean, this team is really bereft of offensive talent at forward, and so you're in this situation where not only does Quinn Hughes have the ability to do these things from the blue line, but he's almost been kind of forced to recently because the Canucks just don't have the options up front, and I can't really think of many recent examples where you have not only the defenseman with that skill set, but the need to step up and carry his team so much offensively night to night. And man, from everything we're seeing from Quinn Hughes, you know, he's fought through injury. This means a lot to him. He is taking it on his shoulders to try to will this team to the playoffs, so I wouldn't be surprised at all if we do get another similar performance from Hughes tonight.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either. And a lot of times it sets up because you get these great offensive defensemen, and like you mentioned, they've got running mates. They've got the top line that they're going to be out with all the time, because it makes so much sense to pair up your best defenseman and your top forward line to create more. He doesn't have that at all. And the other times you see it is when a team is down by 2 to 3 goals in the third period, and a defenseman all of a sudden, even guys that aren't that upper echelon, but everyone goes, okay, we can take some risks. We can maybe pinch. We can stay in and try a couple things because we know the team needs a goal. You're right. He's just doing it from the drop of the puck. And, I'm fully not going to say the game's decided based on what the lineup looks like for Vancouver. But you mentioned Hoglander and Pettersson. I mean, that's a massive storyline. We'll see what it comes down to in a couple hours here when the Canucks give full updates on them. But going to be really difficult, especially not just losing those two guys, but it seems like they're sort of both finding their way after what's been a tough season for the two of them.
After playing the Devils, the Canucks will face your former team, Thomas. I'm trying to think of the name of the arena. I don't remember anymore. UBS Center?
UBS Arena.
Yeah, so UBS, and they'll play an Islanders team that's actually found their game of late, playing some better hockey. What challenges does that team pose as we look ahead to Wednesday?
Well, they've, over the recent little, we'll call it the last month or so, they became a really patient hockey team, and that's not really what I would say, but the Islanders before, I mean, it's a group that has put up a ton of points recently, just finding different ways to win. And, similar to the Islanders of the past, where they've got really good goaltending, they're playing with more structure now. It's sort of a misnomer to think, oh, the New York Islanders, they don't really give you much and capitalize on their opportunities. I mean, it was that way 5 years ago, but that hasn't really been reality the last couple of years. But they're getting back to that, where it might be quiet for a couple periods and they don't really give up much at all, but they get practically nothing. And then they chip in and cash in on their chances. It's surprised a lot of people since the deadline and Brock Delson moving on, but they've actually played a more responsible level. So they're a really tough out. And the other part of that, I mean, you guys know Bo Horvat well. He's, since that trade deadline, since Four Nations, he's looking like a guy that knows that you're running out of offense and weapons, and he's been a horse for them recently as well. So not just a big one for the Canucks tonight in the sense of Jersey team that has things slipped away just a touch, but, you're going to go see the Islanders right away that are in the same position that the Canucks are. They're a couple points out and maybe a touch of a better shape and have some games in hand, but not a lot of runway for them. So always a tough time of the year, especially when your team like the Canucks on the bubble.
Yeah, and I mean, we've been so locked in on paying attention to the Western Conference playoff race and Canucks right in the thick of it there. And, now they come out east and they played the Rangers, who are desperate, battling for that final wild card spot. Then you got the Islanders, then you got the Blue Jackets, all teams kind of in that mix. I mean, Montreal has really come on strong recently. They're sitting there now. Ottawa looks like they're going to be safe in the first wild card spot. How do you see that battle for the final spot between, Montreal, the Rangers, the Islanders? Throw the Blue Jackets in there as well. How do you see that playing out over the final 10 or 12 games of the season?
That's going to be wild, and it's going to be crazy. And, covering the Islanders on the day-to-day, you get, for the last, we'll call it 6 weeks, it's been crazy looking at the standings and seeing the team fall out, much to the, in a similar position that Vancouver's in. I mean, it wasn't quite that rosy in the sense that there was about 4 or 5 teams ahead of them, but you realize how quickly things can change in a weekend of hockey or 1 week, and all of a sudden a 3-game winning streak paired with a group that goes, 1-1 or only manages to pick up a couple. It sort of made me realize how much hockey there is left, with a dozen games, and it doesn't seem like a whole lot, but those standings can really shift. The Islanders play Columbus tonight, so that's a massive game as far as one of those teams afford not to pick up points against each other and still get into the playoff mix. And I think there's the thing that stands out to me. I think there's just great storylines dotted up and down it. I mean, Montreal would be something to see them be ahead of their rebuild at a time when earlier on in the season, everyone was saying, okay, they messed it up. The rebuild's not happening. They're going in the wrong direction. Columbus for so many reasons. We've talked about that. And the Islanders, a team that keeps chipping away, and the Rangers to fall from grace. I mean, it's really really any team right now, but the Islanders play the Rangers. They play Columbus twice, so I think they do control a little bit of their own destiny in the sense that they're playing the teams that they need to catch rather than stacking up against Western Conference teams or teams that are at the very top of their divisions or conferences that are even more difficult to beat as they sharpen up. So whatever it shakes out to be, it's going to be an awesome ending and maybe even more exciting in the East than it will be in the West, but we'll see.
Speaking of storylines, just to double back to the game tonight between the Canucks and the Devils, Devils coach Sheldon Keefe made some waves over the weekend with his comments about defenseman Jonathan Kovacevic. And, you know, Kovacevic after the game had what I thought some pretty generic comments. Nothing wrong with that, right? Just saying, hey, we need to have that playoff mentality here. And Keefe's asked about it and responds that, well, yeah, he could play a lot better. That's the number one thing. And, you know, raised some eyebrows certainly around the league. As a former player, how did you react to those comments from Sheldon Keefe?
I didn't like it. It raised my eyebrows. I mean, I reached out to a couple people right away saying, what's going on? I think my biggest takeaway was, well, either Sheldon Keefe was missing some context of what Jonathan Kovacevic said or how he said it, and he felt like it was an attack on maybe what the team's mentality was, or we're missing some context between the two guys. But, I didn't like it at all. At the same time, I mean, professional hockey, it's a business, and you got to be at your best. And in hearing Keith elaborate a little bit today on what his message is, he sort of focused on every single guy showing up and doing their job, and that's sort of a conversation that maybe they've been trying to preach in the dressing room. And maybe at that time, after what continues to be a tough stretch for them, he took it in the wrong way. But regardless, I mean, I don't think it's a great look, but at the same time, you know, Keith pushed buttons in Toronto and found a way to get more out of guys. So we'll see if that has a lasting effect or maybe even a boost. But I found it really strange.
Yeah, it was a surprising one, no doubt about it. Thomas, really appreciate the time. Thank you for doing this again, and enjoy the matchup tonight.
Thanks, guys. You too. Enjoy.
That is Thomas Hickey, a former NHL defenseman, now working, covering the Islanders, as he said, on the day-to-day, and of course, part of the Amazon Prime broadcast as well. So he'll be working the Canucks and the Devils tonight. And yeah, the funny thing about the Sheldon Keefe reaction was it was such a, as I said, generic, like, safe comment from Kovacevic, just being like, yeah, we need to have a playoff mentality. That's the kind of thing you almost roll your eyes at because it's so cliche.
Yeah.
Rather than an explosive thing that your coach might take issue with for some reason, right? Like, it's there's no meat there to really get upset about, and yet Sheldon Keefe seemed to be very upset about it. That's what didn't quite square for me.
Yeah, I mean, Jonathan Kovacevic has been huge for that team too, immense, right? And like, surprising, was basically acquired for free. So just signed a big contract to be there for a while. Like, none of it makes sense. I wonder what?
Yeah, no, you're right. It's just like, what's going on here?
I wonder if it's one of those things, you know, this happens to me sometimes, often when I'm crossing the street, where you just kind of briefly lose control of your instrument.
Sure, yeah.
Like, I honestly just wonder if Keith just in a moment lost his temper and that's kind of it.
Yeah. Yeah, the kind of situation where he went off the podium and then like 10 minutes later was like, why the heck did I say that?
Yeah, like what? Like, that's not who I am.
Why would
that's,
I do that?
That's not what I want to be. Like, what? That happens to us all. Like, I don't think it's a huge issue.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it's like, oh, they're cooked or Sheldon Keefe's a bad coach. It was just so weird.
No, but I do think it's context. Like, if we see the Devils no-show tonight, I don't think we're going to be like, I think it could be a storyline.
It's a story. It's 100% a story.
Yeah.
How do they respond to that?
Absolutely.
And he just said, you know, Hickey just said, like, look, Sheldon Keefe, he's been around. He's pushed buttons. He's done it before. He knows a little bit what he's doing anyways, even if it was a mistake. So we'll see if he's able to generate something from his team, a response from his team in this game against the Canucks.
I think he's a pretty good offensive coach. I he's never been my favorite bench boss, but I think he's good. Like, I think he's good to very good. So I'm sure it's not, I don't know. We'll see. Look, that team without Jack Hughes just doesn't have bite. They just don't have the same venom.
No.
But they're still dangerous and they're still fast. They still profile like a team that can give the Canucks fits. I feel like we've seen the Canucks struggle against them multiple times over the last few seasons, including earlier this year where they lost
6-0.
So, you know, they like Jesper Bratt has torched the Canucks in like two of the last three meetings that these teams have faced. So they're not, they're very live tonight without question.
Oh yeah.
This is not an easy matchup.
No, it's not. It's certainly not a gimme whatsoever.
I don't think there's an easy matchup. Like we're talking about the difficulty of their opponents down the way here. Right. And we've been noting, like, you can't afford to drop a game to the Devils, who are kind of reeling and don't have Jack Hughes, but they're dangerous, right? Like, mm-hmm. the Islanders are a dangerous opponent. The Columbus Blue Jackets are a bad matchup for Vancouver. Flat
yeah.
out.
They have the only ones that you could, I think, possibly characterize as easy. Now, there's one more that I'll throw in as a potential. But
Seattle?
See, they've got Seattle at home, you've got Anaheim at home, and you've got San Jose at home.
Yeah, except we've kind of seen Anaheim play the Canucks well.
100%. But if you're looking for like, okay, if you're doing the let's go through the schedule and choose win or loss, those are the only ones that you're like 100% putting in the win call. That's not how it works.
Of course,
you could still lose those games.
I worry. Like Shane Wright's speed gave the Canucks fits that game they blew in Seattle. Troy Terry and the Ducks
speed. I'm not saying these are guaranteed wins, but those are the easiest games on the schedule.
I know, and even those like scare me a bit.
Now, I'd have to go and look at... You know, are their opponents playing back to backs and all that travel? Like, though that situation plays into it as well. The only other one you could maybe say would be last game of the season against Vegas if Vegas has everything sewn up. Not that it be then it's easy.
The Canucks have to earn their right to not have sewn up for themselves.
They sure do.
There's a lot
Absolutely.
Of work to do.
But that's the only other one that you can kind of point to and say like, oh, okay, that could be interesting. Vegas resting people or doesn't care about the game, right? Like that is a potential factor in the Canucks' favor. But as you said,
God, that'd be so funny.
There's a lot of road to go before you even get to that mattering.
Totally. The Canucks, you know. Play a Nick Waugh's first line center, Vegas Golden Knights team. Brett Howden is first line center, Vegas Golden Knights team with their playoff lives on the line. That would be.
And lose?
Oh, man. Yeah.
That would be tough.
You know,
at home, no less.
I do think there's an element to which this core group, I just want to say, does have guts. I think we've seen them clutch up multiple times. Do you remember? They
have been hard to kill.
They've been hard to kill.
Let's put it that way.
100%. I was going to say they have bums.
I think just
I like hard to kill better.
Just since we've been doing the show, how many times
do they get written off and then win?
Yeah. How many times is it like if they lose tonight, the season's over, and then they're down in the game, and it's like, oh, like the St. Louis game, and they're
the
like,
Calgary
oh my gosh,
game.
They came back and won
the Calgary game.
Yeah. And that's happened like multiple times a year where it's
that's
like
happened multiple times last week.
We're standing at the precipice of the tipping point moment where everyone's out and this is over. And yet, and then somehow it's like, oh no, we're having the same conversation again next week, right? Because they found a way to stave it off. They found a way to stay alive. And people are texting in saying the Rangers game was the moment. If they win the next three here, though, that's not what people are talking about going into the weekend.
It absolutely might not be the moment. I mean, I remember this game. Where they lost to, so the Bruce There It Is season, right? Where like they'd done so well for so long and then they lose to the Wild in overtime, but they beat the Stars. And that was like a big shocker outcome. And then they lose back to back to St. Louis and then to Vegas at home. And it was like, wow, like they've now lost 4 and 5. The bubble has popped.
Yep.
This is over. And then they come back out against Vegas, 5-1 win. 5-1 win over the Coyotes. Pummel the Sharks. Beat the Golden Knights again. Beat the Coyotes 7-1. Beat the Stars 6-2. And it was just like, oh my God. Like, we've literally seen this where it was like written off, way out of the playoffs. And look, those six wins, I mean, they didn't ever pass Vegas that season, who also didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they were the 9th seed with a bullet. The 10th seed in the West with a bullet. But, like, that situation feels pretty similar. Like, 10 games to go, hit a skid, everyone writes you off, and they reeled off 7 wins, most of them lopsided. With, like, by the way, to add context to this, a top line that featured, like, Podkolzin and Alex Chiasson going absolutely nuke.
Yeah. The other thing is also, so that's like the macro context of the whole season where they're hard to kill. It seems like there's moments where it's done and then they figure out a way to keep going. How many 6-on-5 goals has this team scored over the last couple of years? Like since Rick Tocchet has been here. Do you remember when Rick Tocchet took over and it was the Connor Bedard draft year, right? And they weren't making the playoffs. The number of like last minute or last couple of minute goals that Pettersson and Kuzmenko combined for down the stretch that season was unreal. You think about Besser in the playoffs last year against Nashville, the empty netters.
And I don't think people remember just how bad the Canucks were in that fourth game. And also the fact that if Casey DeSmith stole game three, the Canucks had no business having a 2-1 lead and then put in one of their worst performances of last season until Colton Sissons hit the post and the Canucks went absolutely nuke. Was it two empty netters and the overtime winner for Besser?
No, Lindholm scored the overtime winner.
Right, okay.
But Besser scored the two 6-on-5 goals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Insane.
And then he does it again, like, against St. Louis. It's just man, you get to 6-on, like, every time this team's at 6-on-5, I'm like, they're probably going to score. Because they've done it so often.
100%.
They've done it so, so often.
They also keep it simple, man. They just attack downhill, rip pucks. Like, I actually think there's a simplicity to their offensive approach that helps them a lot. Watching the Blues, especially this weekend, and honestly, even in the game against Vancouver, it's clear that they have a higher offensive gear than the Canucks have right now, but they overpass.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was, like, very apparent. As they were frittering away.
You're saying they need to play more north-south hockey?
I do. I honestly think they could use a little bit more north-south.
Okay, we'll take a break. We want to talk about the lineup for the Canucks. We don't have official information on who's going to be in or out, but a good chance that Elias Pettersson and Nils Höglander are absent. How can the Canucks handle it against the Devils tonight in a very, very important game? We'll tackle that. Send your text in as well, 650-650, to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Final segment of Canucks Talk next on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, final segment of the show here on a Canucks game day. They're taking on the New Jersey Devils, 4:30 start, an Amazon Prime game, so not on traditional TV. If you're not able to watch, of course, you can listen here right here on Sportsnet 650 with Batch and Randeep on the call pregame with Sat and Dan. After Canucks Central. So we've talked a lot about this game, and we won't get any clarity on this. I think Rick Tocchet is supposed to speak to the media in about 25 minutes here at 2 o'clock. So he'll, of course, be asked about not just Thatcher Demko and whether he's starting this game, although all signs point to yes, he will, but also the availability of Elias Pettersson and Nils Höglander, who left the Canucks loss against the Rangers early, and two guys who, you know, playing on the top line, playing big roles, both playing better, playing some of their better hockey of the season. I mean, certainly in the case of Nils Höglander, really carved out a role
for himself.
Oh,
I think in the
case
of Elias Pettersson, too, this has been, you know, certainly his best stretch of the season.
And so now it's unclear whether they will be in the lineup. I know IMAC was on the station with Halford and Brough this morning saying he would be surprised, and he's on the trip saying he would be surprised if either of them play tonight in New Jersey. So you at least have to prepare for the possibility that you don't have either, like, two of your top line forwards in this extremely important game. And of course, that's especially notable because you are already so thin at center, losing Filip Hedl, who's not on the trip. And we were looking at this and saying, oh man, like, Pettersson, Suter, Bluger, Oman, that's tough down the middle. It's like not a lot you can really rely on to generate offense there. You take Pettersson, you take the number one guy off that depth chart. They call up Aturatu, as you mentioned, under emergency conditions, which is a tell about the likelihood of Pettersson or Höglander getting into this game. And all of a sudden, you were faced with some very, very difficult lineup construction questions. And how do you go about putting your best foot forward, your best lineup forward, one that can hang in this game? Now, you brought up in the first segment and teased it a little bit that you might like to see them try someone we don't think of as a center typically down the middle in this game, considering their other options.
Yeah, I wonder about Dakota Joshua in particular.
Okay.
Now, I like Dakota Joshua more on the wing, not because he can't play center. In fact, before he arrived in Vancouver, he was basically a full-time center. And I think what happened once he got to Vancouver, because I've talked to him about it a couple times, is his work forechecking. Because remember, his first season was the was the Bruce season after the Boudreaux bump.
Correct?
Yes. Yeah. And as you'll recall, that Canucks team, the Bruce There It Is era was characterized by the Canucks being like, we can't break the puck out and we're not going to try. Mm-hmm. So we are going to punt and hunt in the neutral zone in terms of our breakouts. And we are going to be completely reliant on our forecheck to generate offense. And Joshua turned out was like elite as an F1, right? Once you had him as a first guy in on the forecheck player, his speed, his pace, his size was just incredible, hunting down, mm-hmm. Rival defenders. And so I think that happened. I think he realized pretty quickly that, hey, this is a niche. I can do damage. I can carve out a full-time role in the NHL doing this. And so I think he's stuck on the wing since then. But for much of his career, and in fact, before he arrived in Vancouver, like one of the, he's still listed as a center in a lot of places because
yeah,
he,
although
he was
that,
one.
The listing of center versus wing is always
sure,
completely,
like Linus Carlson.
Completely insane. Yeah.
Like Linus Carlson. But nonetheless, you know, Dakota Joshua has played a lot of center at the professional level prior to arriving in Vancouver, and he can do it. Like, he can do it, and the Canucks need a credible option there, I think, more than ever. They're desperate for it, let's be real.
Yes.
And so,
although the interesting thing about this is, if both Pettersson and Hoglander can't go, and you're dressing 12 forwards, which I guess another option here is 11-7, like, Aturatu's going to be in the lineup. You know what I mean? They only have, if Pettersson and Hoglander can't go, then you only have 12 healthy forwards on the roster right now, and Aturatu is one of them.
For sure.
But
for
you
sure.
Can still, that doesn't necessarily exclude building this around Dakota Joshua at center.
No. Well, I mean, Nils Amon at center, like you could play Nils Amon with Aturatu and have Ratu take draws and then shift to the wing for Nils Amon, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's sort of one option. Joshua's taken 150 draws as a Canucks forward over the last 3 years. For context, though, just to like put in a context of how rarely he's been used at center, Sam Lafferty took almost 400 draws in his season as a Canucks. So he was a more
Incredible.
Frequently used
yeah.
winger. Jack Studnicka took more.
Yeah.
So not exactly a first choice center option.
You're
for
right,
team.
Though. You look back and like, so the first season he broke into the NHL, he only played 12 games with St. Louis and like less than 10 minutes a game. And he took, you know, 75 faceoffs in those 12
games.
Well,
because he's good at them.
Yeah.
He's good at them. Like he's a 52.
Yeah, he won 57% of them. Yeah,
yeah. He's a 53% at 5-on-5 guy. When he's taken faceoffs on the power play, he's only taken 7, but he's won almost all of them. 85%. You know, and by the way, he's 55.6% on defensive zone draws. So he's not an empty calorie guy. Like one thing that's important when you're looking at a guy's faceoff percentage is to check, and see what their neutral zone faceoff rate is, because the best faceoff guys in hockey know that the consequences of losing neutral zone draws aren't very high and will save moves, right? Like the best guys are guys who crush it in the O zone and the D zone and not in the neutral zone. Like it's honestly like something interestingly, like Pettersson's a pretty interesting example. I'm sure it's because in part he knows he's not the best faceoff guy. Not 49% in the offensive zone, 48% in the defensive zone, 44.5% in the neutral zone.
Yeah.
Right. And that's like context. Like his overall numbers take a hit, but in part it's because he's probably not saving his best.
Yeah.
Until it really matters. And you'll basically see that almost across the board. So anyway, JT Miller has the same basic pattern. With Joshua, though, you've got a guy who can win draws. He's a big body. And I'd add this, like, I don't know that his F1 disruptiveness has been
there.
Well, not to the same level. And I don't think that's his fault. Right. But I think slowing the game down, playing in the middle of the ice might not be the worst thing for him. I don't know that I'd want him like taking a lot of defensive zone shifts or playing matchup minutes.
Matchup role all of a sudden.
But man, I do think it would be helpful for this team if they were able to fatten their lineups. Like you put Joshua in the middle and create like a sheltered kind of scoring line.
Yeah.
Right. Load him up with offensive zone draws. Hope that you can get some offense, you know, put him with Garland, who can kind of play center in terms of, like, he can be your...
He's the playmaker.
He can do the driving through the neutral zone and in the offensive zone. Joshua does his go-to-the-net and work on retrievals bit, put him with the Brusque. It's like, that's a decent sheltered middle six line, and at least I think it gives you a better chance of actually manufacturing some offense than just about anything else you can do. Because here's the truth, right? Pew Suter, Teddy Bluger is your top six centerman. It's fine defensively. They can do the job. They're not going to kill you in terms of like making mistakes that cost you the game. The problem is do you generate enough shots? Do you generate enough scoring chances? Do you have enough offensive pop with those guys playing minutes that significant? And Atu Ratu and Niels Amon, 12 combined goals in their NHL careers, 150 NHL games combined in their NHL careers, and most of those are Amon's. You know, it's not like you have a lot coming behind them either, right? So I think the main quandary here is how do you generate enough offense? I sort of wonder, like, if you put Joshua with DeBrusk in the middle, put him with DeBrusk and Garland and play them in offensive deployment, it still gives you kind of like a credible-ish top line with Pew Suter, Brock Besser, and Drew O'Connor.
Drew O'Connor, all right.
Go chase Nico Hischier around all night, boys, and have fun. Yep. Don't kill us. And then you kind of can at least create like a punt third line to go up against Palat and Dogson Mercer with...
So that's like Bluger, Sherwood...
Linus Karlsson.
Okay, yeah.
No, I mean, look, these options aren't great.
You're right. And then you got Amon, Ratu, and Lekkerimäki.
Yeah.
The Abbotsford line. Where it's just like, you guys might not play much.
Yeah, no, but it's an energy line. And you're hopeful, like, hey, go out, don't hurt us. Maybe we get a goal from this group.
Yeah.
Maybe you bring some energy and some youthful exuberance that we kind of need. And then
got Lekkerimäki in the lineup, power play minutes. You can move him up if you're chasing, things like that, right?
And you mix mesh. Like, if you end up leading, God willing, through 40 minutes, you know, in the third, you can play... Move Joshua back to the wing, play him with Garland and Bluger. You feel pretty good about that as a safety blanket line. And move Niels Amon to play third line center between Linus Karlsson and Kiefer Sherwood. And it's like, okay, you roll nine. Like, that's what it looks like. If you're chasing the game late, well, you're going to put Lekkerimäki and Atu Ratu in the top nine to try and buy you a goal. Those guys play with Sherwood on a makeshift third line. And you've still got kind of the six forwards most likely to contribute offensively for you, and Joshua, DeBrusk, Besser, Pew Suter,
Garland
and O'Connor in your top six. So it's like, I just feel like this solves the most. Something like this, I think, gives them their best chance of actually getting enough offense 5-on-5 to hold the fort. And grind out, scrap out two crucial points against the Devils in the absence of two critical members of their forward group.
Yeah, and I mean, the key is you're late enough in the season and you're in a desperate enough position that everything has to be on the table. You have to be willing to try some unorthodox things, especially with a player who, as you said, like, does have experience playing down the middle in his hockey career, even in his pro career. If, again, this is the kind of thing where if it's game 35, you say, all right, well, hey, here's a chance for Atu Ratu to get some reps, right? Here's a chance for, let's see what we got from Atu Ratu at center and see how it goes. You're not in that position. You're in the position where you have to be as creative and innovative as you can to squeeze the most out of your lineup. Now, you might ultimately come to it and think, well, man, Joshua hasn't played center in, what, like 3 years? So is it too big a risk? But I do think there's enough you can do to manage. And the other thing is also, I mean, with Jack Hughes out, it's Nico Hischier at the top of the lineup, but then you also got, you know, Cody Glass and Justin Dowling playing down the middle for the New Jersey Devils.
Sure, but you've got Cody Glass playing with Jesper Bratt.
Yes.
You know, like, that's a good line.
Yeah.
That's been a good line for them. Dawson Mercer is legit.
He's good, yeah.
Legit good. And then Justin Dowling, ex-Canuck.
I know.
Everyone forgets.
Well, and two ex-Canucks... scratched in this one too for them in Sprong and Daniel Sprong and Curtis Lazar.
Oh,
and Jacob Markstrom in net.
Yeah, interesting that they'd scratch Lazar given their potential edge at center.
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway,
and Cody Glass, of course, should have been a Canuck if they had picked him over Elias Pettersson.
Yikes.
Are we going to revive that discourse? relitigate the 2017 draft.
Only if Pettersson keeps struggling. What did Jim know?
Justice for Jim Benning. Why did those scouts bully him into taking Pettersson?
Good God.
Oh, man.
Okay, so, yeah, I mean, look, it's not, you don't have any good options if you're Rick Tocchet.
No. We've said this a bunch recently, and it's kind of cliched because, like, yeah, scoring first is always good. We all know the stats around that. But as you said, they have good defensive centers. Like, even Neil Zeman, that's his job. Go out there and make nothing happen.
Yeah, well,
you know what I mean?
I will say this about Neil Zeman. Off the rush, he occasionally actually does something pretty interesting offensively.
Yeah.
The thing is once you're in zone, it's like, I don't think the thought of attempting to work the puck into a dangerous area on in-zone play has, like, ever occurred to him. Honestly, that's how he plays the game. It's like, he's pretty good at retrievals. He's a pretty big body. He's a pretty good forechecker.
He's a good skater.
He's a great skater. You know, I still think he could have a really long career and maybe even play top nine if he could become a 55% faceoff guy. Like, mm-hmm. if he had that one attribute, I think he'd be a totally different asset than what he is now. And by the way, that's still something you can learn. Like, that's not something that he necessarily won't have forever. But it's shocking to me because he's been productive in the American League at a relatively young age. Like, really productive. And I watch him off the rush, and I'm like, he's kind of sneakily got a little bit of juice, but only off the rush.
Yeah.
In zone, there's nothing there. And then Ratu, it's just the speed, man. Like, the speed.
He's almost the opposite, like the inverse. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if you combined Oman and Ratu.
Right.
You'd have a great player.
Oh, for sure.
You'd be like, oh, wow, this is awesome.
Because he's got the draws, too.
I was going to say, wins on faceoffs, yeah. You take the speed, right?
And he's legitimately excellent in traffic. He's, like, pretty creative down low beneath the hash marks. I mean, I still think Atu Ratu as a winger, as, like, a power winger, is a really interesting player with maybe even, like, second line or top six upside. I'm not sold on the center part of it just because of the lack of foot speed, but... he can do some interesting stuff in traffic. He's got a pretty high skill level. I just worry when you're talking about, like, the thing about Cody Glass is, yeah, has he lived up to his potential? No, but he's fast.
Mm-hmm.
Dawson Mercer's a strong skater. Nico Hischier's an exceptional skater, right? Like, the speed edge down the middle is something that when we've seen it, like, we saw it against Utah, we saw it against Seattle, right? When you notice it in these Canucks games, the Canucks look a little bit dead in the water.
Yeah, and that's why, again, you know, if you can get up early and maybe, like, with Lekkomäki on the power play, I know you're missing Pettersson there, but you still have Hughes, Besser, you have some of your other power play options, like, get a special teams goal, and then I know fans, like, the park the bus meme with Rick Tocchet has gotten under fans' skins, but, like, if there was ever a game to park the bus, it's tonight. You got Neil Zeman and Pew Suter and Teddy Bluger. Park that bus if you get a lead against the Devils.
I think part of the truth of this Canucks team that we should acknowledge, too, is, like, as big a loss as Pettersson and Hoglander are at this stage of the season, the real offensive engine of this team is Quinn Hughes, and the most important secondary engine is Filip Hronek. It's just true.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's the best thing for the team, but I think we've seen it of late. I think truly, if the Canucks are going to win, it's going to be point shots through traffic. It's going to be
layered screens.
It's
structure.
It's going to be ugly, but hey, it can be effective.
Let's go. All right. We have officially.
Did you just quit? Like, are you just like, I feel like the face you made there, you were like, oh, let's go. You were so upset.
It was a tongue in cheek. Let's go.
Well, no, I know, but I could read the upset on your face. Like, it's like you were thinking of you seem pretty out, Jamie.
Ouse, as we say on Canucks.
It's a tough spot. It's a tough spot. I'll leave it at that. We'll see. I'm not writing the obituary yet.
No,
we'll see how this week plays out here.
Is it in the drafts?
This team,
a tough spot. Yeah, that's right. It's ready to go at a moment's notice.
This team has too much. What's his name? Boris the Bullet.
Who's that?
Boris the Bullet Dodger. In Snatch?
Oh, right. Okay.
The character who's impossible to kill?
Yeah.
Boris the Blade. Boris the Blade. I Googled it.
There you go. Yeah, a little too much of that. Impossible to kill. Okay, what I was going to say there is we do have at least some official news from the Canucks just a few minutes ago from their Twitter account. General manager Patrick Alvin announced today that goaltender Thatcher Demko has been activated from IR. So officially available, officially an option tonight for the Canucks. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet in a few minutes' time. After our show anyways, whether he's indeed starting, but the reporting from Dhaliwal, the reporting from Friedman was very much along the lines of if there is not a crazy setback of some sort, he is going to play. He is going to start. He has been activated from IR. So it certainly looks like Thatcher Demko will make his return to the Canucks crease tonight against the New Jersey Devils.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's go.
Sorry, how is that any different than Jamie's just now?
It was the same defeated let's go.
I mean, I just don't buy, more than anything, I just don't buy that this is a Demko rushing back thing, given how this sort of return to play protocol has been followed and extended here. I think Demko's going to give this team a major boost. I don't think he needs to be vintage Thatcher Demko. He needs to be competent. He needs to give them a chance to win, because just by spelling Kevin Lankinen at this juncture, that's huge value for the Canucks. Like, if Demko can get on a heater and be, you know, a Vezina caliber player, obviously that changes the complexion of the Canucks stretch run. But even just having someone to give Lankinen a rest here and there, man, I think that's a major ad for this hockey club.
Let's go.
Wah,
are you Eeyore now?
Yeah, apparently. I tried to do it in the tone of a wah-wah.
Thanks for noticing.
We'll leave it on that note. That's the show for today.
Sorry, are you saying let's go, like off the air?
Yes.
Yes.
Let's finish. Let's go. Canucks, Devils tonight, 4:30, Amazon Prime game. But of course, we'll have the broadcast here, right here on Sportsnet 650.